Here we go. It is Saturday, October 1st, 2022, and doing the Museum LA Oral History Project. I'm going to have you start off by introducing yourself. Tell me your name, age, nationality, how long you've lived in Lewiston.
Okay. Hi, my name is Mana, last name Abdi, and I am 26. I am ethnically Somali, but was born in Kenya in 1995 and lived there until 2007 and then moved to the United States in 2007. My family is Somali, as I mentioned, I'm ethnically Somali, so my family is Somali and they were all born in Somalia, but due to the civil war, they moved to Kenya prior to 91.
Okay. And so when did you move to Lewiston?
So when we moved to the U.S. in 2007, we lived in Kansas City for a year and a half. So we moved to Maine in 2009, March 10th, 2009 to be precise.
Okay. So why Lewiston? I mean, I know you were young, yeah. But do you know sort of how and why Lewiston became the place?
There was a large traction of Somalis coming in between 2000 and 2009 anyways. But I think, so the words got out to like a bunch of Somalis that they were moving here. But we had a couple of cousins that lived here and my mom just felt like having close relatives would be useful to us as we're growing and developing in this country. So she decided we're just gonna pack myself, my two brothers, and her, and then we're gonna move to Maine. We didn't know anything about Maine. We didn't know anything about the U.S., but we certainly didn't know anything about Maine, in particular Lewiston, but we found ourselves here in 2009.
Yeah. In 2009, and do you still live in Lewiston?
Yes, I literally lived in the same two blocks.
Really?
We've been living in the Tree Street area since we got here. So we've just been moving down the street, going to the back to that street, and then back to. So we just lived in the same blocks.
So you went, you know, based on sort of me knowing you a little bit, yeah. I know like you went to college, came back, so.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to sort of to stay in Lewiston?
One, I think is we're I've developed as an adult, continue to develop as an adult. It's sort of those things of what you know kind of situation. But I think it's because I also have family ties, I have community ties, I have friendships. So there's little different factors that sort of add to the reason that I've stayed. But I think there's also the sort of the environmental of factors of where Maine is a very quiet, it's very it's not fast paced, it's all of those things that just kind of give you easier time to figure out who you are and going to the schools here and all of that. So I think there's just a whole lot of different things, but I think overall it's mainly I have stayed here mainly because of family. So yeah.
So tell me, say a little bit more about your family.
Yeah, so four of us came. I'm the youngest of eight, I should mention.
Okay.
Yeah, so five of my siblings are still living in Kenya, but myself and two brothers are living here, and then my mom. So there are four of us that came into the country together. My two brothers are happily married. Mm-hmm. One has four kids or something, and then the other one has a child who's a 1 year old, and then there's me. So there's just and then there's my mom, who has just been part of the picture since the beginning. Mm-hmm. and then obviously we have my sister-in-laws and things of that nature, so our family is rather quickly growing. Mm-hmm. Which is great. So that's sort of the extent, and then I have a whole slew of cousins and friends that live here. So
And so by here, is it in Lewiston or is Maine or U.S.?
In Maine, okay. In Maine, Lewiston, mainly between Lewiston and Portland. But most of my family, even cousin-wise, we're strictly within the Lewiston border. So,
okay.
Yeah, we just kind of stick to. We've never even thought to move out of Lewiston, even not as far as Auburn, which is across the bridge.
Right.
So it's kind of just interesting how we've just been kind of stationed stationed ourselves in Lewiston, and I think Lewiston reminds us so much of back home, the green and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think particularly for parents that are a bit on the older, like my mom and her friends, they have the luxury to be able to walk around mm-hmm. in the park and things like that. So I think that also adds a sense of sort of like homeness for them. So mm-hmm. I think that's like just helps solidify that sort of, this is where we're gonna be stationed until either I go back to Kenya or
right.
you retire here. So whichever comes first. So. Mm.
Right, and so you mentioned a little bit about, Somali community in Maine and Lewiston. Is it how you define your community? Is it you define it, you know, in other ways? Just sort of speak to me a little bit about how you define, you know, your community.
I think people are incredibly quick to sort of like categorize us. Like there is this governmental status and how people came into this country, right? Like some folks came in as asylum seekers, others came in as refugees, and others came in as, you know, folks who are just looking for better opportunities, and I'm sure there's a label for that too. But nobody has those stickers like as a name tag, right? Like those are just the governmental label to identify folks for like resources that are provided by the state or the federal government. But I think beyond that, coming here, nobody, unless you have a sort of in-depth conversation, no one actually knows how someone got here. Mm-hmm. But I think the human nature is to want to group and sort of categorize folks into different, so that it's easy to identify them. But I think it's also easy to sort of adjust and control the narrative, how, whichever direction that you want it to. So I think a lot of folks, when they look at us in Lewiston in particular, they really do see us as like New Mainers and all of this thing, which is, I find it very odd, because like those of us who grew up here or those of us who are born here, it gives a very it's very time stamped mm-hmm. where you can't get out of, like you there's everything in life has expiration, even right. living has expiration, right? But for some odd reason, I think like people are incredibly fixated on being like, oh, you're a New Mainer, you must be a New Mainer. I'm like, I object to that, because like we have been here longer than anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So what do you call that? I think for me, it's just us. Like we're not just a drop in a vast desert. We're mm-hmm. the global majority. Why wouldn't they just be here
right.
at this point in our lives, right? Like if I go back to anywhere outside of the United States, we are the global majority, whether people want to see us that way or not. So here, I just happened to think that like we just found ourselves here, right. and this has happened to be our home at the time, in this time, in this moment in time, and that's just that. And this is a community that happened to come together because they have a shared experience in culture and in faith, mm-hmm. and they have decided to just collectively come to one space where they can share conversations, share community, share both hard times and good times. So I think like this is the default, where people wanted the default to label themselves in or be labeled in a different categories. But I would just say we're, you know, I don't necessarily see us being any different than any group that has ever looked for a place to call home. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know what the label is, but just I think we're just another group.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's probably going to be another group who is likely to sort of experience sort of that same path. No matter how many blueprints you create, unfortunately, you can't replicate it for every community. So.
And when you say we, are you referring to like Somali folks, or like more specific than that, or more general than that?
I think like our community within Lewiston, that's what I'm familiar with. So mm-hmm. We're larger than just being Somalis, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have West Africans, we have a slew of different, we have Afghanis, we have right. incredibly vast, ethnically diverse groups that have come, that have decided Lewiston is going to be their home.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Somalis tend to sort of, because they are the majority in numbers, but they're not the only group that's living here. So when mm-hmm. I say we, I'm encompassing all of them,
mm-hmm.
No matter which which side of the globe they're coming from is mm-hmm. anyone who have decided to call Lewiston, even white folks, right, like who've lived here forever, anyone who decided to call this home, because ultimately we have a choice, we could leave. So choosing to call Maine or Lewiston your home in particular, I think says sort of, this is it. Like this mm-hmm. is where I call home, and people mm-hmm. taking the time and additional effort to try to sort of label it all into being like new, or whatever, just really dismiss that effort, I think, or dismiss that desire to call a place a home for somebody. So,
Cool. Thank you for that. And so, talk about family, talk about community. Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, so I graduated from University of Maine Farmington, which is up north, and I came back to Lewiston in 2018. It was one of the hardest transitions. I didn't think that was going to be that difficult because things can look so familiar yet so different. And we also had, between 2014 and 2018, we also had a large, like, folks from West Africa and different areas of different part of the world come into Lewiston, so it looked a little different to me, at least. I don't know about other folks, but coming back and having to regain and all of that was rather interesting. But I came back to Lewiston 2018 and just sort of started working at the DA office, and also like just volunteering in different nonprofit organization like Maine Community Integration, just mm-hmm. so that I myself feel like I need to integrate back to my own community in a sense, and finding myself, sort of placing myself in areas that sort of allows you to find yourself back to that community or said community. And now I work at Bates as a program coordinator in the intercultural education department.
All right. So this is interesting. We're going to come back to this question about, like, you know, you getting sort of familiar with being in Lewiston again. And so I guess, you know, I'll just ask that question now. So you left for college and came back, and you said you had to get used to it. Can you tell me a bit about just sort of how you've seen Lewiston change, like, over time, thinking about from the time you came to, like, being there now?
Yeah, I mean, and now we're going into sort of the second phase of my, like, my parents and other folks were the first wave to sort of come in here. And these are folks who have had, like, only a trade skills. They don't necessarily have sort of what we consider standard education, I suppose. I think that's what would be the appropriate term. So a lot of the folks that came in didn't have standard education. It was either interrupted by the war or life just didn't offer that luxury. So us, when we came in, we are sort of the second, I think 2.5 or something, there's an actual term for it too. Mm-hmm. When we came in, we went to school, and now we're coming back into being like a business owners and organization owners or founders. We're homeowners and like all of these different factors. The demographic of Lewiston is entirely changing, and folks who were here as a kid, like, just, you know, 10 years ago, are now adults who themselves have kids. Some folks are in the market to buy a home, they're in the market to start, are entrepreneurs, and so, like, the demographic of that itself is changing, right? And Lewiston looks a lot less white than it did as early as maybe 2019, to be honest with you, just because the community itself is growing rather quickly, and with folks coming in and the other folks having expanding their own families or bringing other people in, is certainly changing a lot. Which when you step outside for like a couple of years coming back, you're like, oh wow, things have certainly changed, right? There's Caribbean restaurants opening. That wasn't a thing. Even in 2014, before I went to college. So coming back and seeing that, that's like, oh, okay. You know, it's wonderful, right? Like, it's offers us a variety of things that didn't exist. So just and the personal politics change as well, really, because now we have two groups who are trying to just figure out what each other's narrative are, but mm-hmm. also how do we compliment one another without there being a sort of a competition, I think, to an extent as
what,
well.
What are the two groups you're
talking about? No, I think just the folks who came in with the trade, sort of like okay. our parents, and then those okay. of us who have received some sort of a standard education, okay. and then having figured out the two where, like, you know, whether for better or for worse, like, those of us who have received a standard education here in the States in particular mm-hmm. have Western values to a large mm-hmm. extent. We do have, even our decision makings, like, a lot of the times our thoughts are influenced by Western ideologies and thoughts. Mm-hmm. So that, compared to our families, mm-hmm. our parents, it doesn't jive all the time because there's this sort of like inherent difference of where thoughts are being formed, and mm-hmm. sometimes that can cause a conflict. And I find that myself sometimes in spaces, even when I'm the most conscious and aware that like my thought process is not the same as the person sitting next to me, mm-hmm. it still creates this odd tension because like we're not the inherence of our thoughts are not coming from the same principles in education. Mm-hmm. So, like, it requires both parties to step back and be like, okay, like, it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong, but we do have to work through that and to like, in order for us to move forward in certain areas. So, for me, I think the point to saying, like, getting used to coming back was that, just being like, oh man, like, a lot of things are different, and you have to learn to sort of be like, oh, okay, which battles is worth really making a whole lot of effort to win, and which ones are you gonna just kind of let go and be like, okay,
yeah,
let's hope that.
So is it a generational divide?
I think for sure.
Yeah, values between an older generation and now a younger generation, but also like going through the education system here and like workplace, all those sort of things are different. Okay, and so, you know, as you say that, it makes me sort of think about one of the other questions we wanted to ask about just sort of the role of sort of traditions and customs that you practice, and right, if religion plays a role in your life, being a Muslim.
Yeah, so majority of Somalis you meet are Muslim, like 99.9% of them are identify as being Muslim, which derives from the faith Islam. Mm-hmm. So that's what we practice, and going into sort of Somali household, its default is to practice Islam, obviously, and practice sort of, or live your life as a Muslim. And I think like, so yes, the way in which you carry yourself, to a large extent in Lewiston or wherever, is of a Muslim, and not, the action of all Muslims are not always great, but right. you know, that's the advisable approach that you are to take, or you're asked to take from your parents and like anybody else that you come across. And that, again, that goes back to that. That itself creates sort of tension, because when you're growing up in Lewiston, you, or at least for me, like the schools in particular, like they don't adhere to prayer time. They don't, mm-hmm. they don't adhere to when we have our Islamic faith sort of celebratory. Now it's changing a little bit, right? That's the other thing, right? The demographic is changing, but also the culture of Lewiston itself is changing, because now they're sort of starting to adhere and adjust themselves in the curriculum and things. Not curriculum, but in the holidays of the school, so that the kids can participate. We didn't have that luxury. We just took the day off.
Right.
Yeah, if there was Eid, which is the celebratory holiday for Muslims, like, we just took the day off because we were like, we're not going to miss it. Like, so you have to do, some people went. Some people still went to school, like, half day or something. Right. But those of us, we had to make that decision for ourselves and be like, oh, I'm not going. Like, it's not, there's, I'm not going. Right. Like, this is my holiday. That's because these folks who have a decision making, who have the power to make decision, didn't decide to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I won't take the day off. But yeah, so I participate. I try to the best that I can to be the best Muslim, but I think depending who you ask, that could be better, right? And I think that's the other thing, like as you're growing, as you're changing, and as you're developing as an adult, you have to figure out what are the balance act between being American, being Somali, being Muslim, being around folks who are even in a workplace, right? Like the amount of time I have to say, I don't actually drink, or yeah. like alcohol is provided to you, or, you know, like bacon is, you know, we don't eat pork. So like asking, I literally was vegetarian for 8 years, like 4 years in high school and 4 years in college, because I was so tired of asking if there was bacon in the food. I was so sick of it. I was like, I am so sick of asking if there's bacon in these food that I'm just going to become vegetarian. And I didn't touch meat for that 80 year. I was like, you keep it. I'll just eat the pasta.
Right.
I'll just have the pasta and whatever mashed potato you got or something. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of sort of the decisions you have to make early on, because it does, the norms here sort of, or the norms in Lewiston doesn't adhere, the schools don't adhere to a lot of that, so who we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you mentioned them sort of changing. Do they now like give off things that you're eating?
Good. I'll be out.
Do they now give students is Eid?
Yeah, I think so. I think it has officially been added to the holiday. Yeah, I know Portland did. So I know, I think Lewiston for sure added. I'm not entirely sure, but I think they did. I think they did. Which is like, I don't know, I think is indirectly also influencing the thoughts of like young kids who are going to our schools about being conscious of other people's faith, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're not too upset having a day off, but you know what I mean? But they also like, you know, the curious one will ask and be like, hey, you know, what is happening today? Why are we taking mm-hmm. the day off, right? Making us, you know, this country loves preaching and lecturing about tolerance and all of that, but mm-hmm. you know, given the opportunity, they keep seeming to miss it. So I don't know. It just feels very counterintuitive to some of the larger principles that they try to teach you. So,
and so that's something that you celebrated with your family. Like, what did you all do?
Eid is obviously like there's two Eids. One that comes after fasting for 30 days, and then you break your fast at night time. We should clarify that. We don't like celebrate the entire 30 days straight. And then so you would get your family together and you celebrate and you'd have food together. They often hold prayer at the memorial, which is right next to the middle school, or mm-hmm. Now the past couple of years they've been holding it outside the Colossae, okay. just the parking lot. So because again, and then that's another, I think, a sign that how large this community is growing, because we're kind of just outgrowing every space. So the parking lot it is now.
Right.
Yeah. So we don't have a lot. Like we don't have a mosque enough that will encompass all of that. But most of the Eid prayers are prayed outside anyways, just so that folks can freely pray wherever they want and still hear what the imam and the folks who are leading the prayer are saying. So the past couple of years has been held outside of the Colossae. So yeah,
all right. Cool. And that wasn't always the case. You said that they've outgrown spaces. Are there spaces that you remember sort of going to around?
Yeah. So I think originally used to just be strictly in the mosques, and then that just quickly like. That was like, that's not feasible. So they did the armory, which is the next to the middle school. And I think they still actually hold some prayers there too for folks who are running late and things like that.
Okay.
But like it quickly outgrew, and then it was inside the Colossae, and then that didn't work. So now it's the parking lot of the Colossae. Wow. So I think they're just going to keep looking for like larger, bigger space, because that's just sort of... the group and every like everyone who follows the faith sort of comes from all over the place. I think Portland, Lewiston is probably the attraction place where people pray the most. Mm-hmm. Like other Muslim who are in more rural Maine probably come down too. So yeah, because you don't need a large group to pray Eid prayer, but I think people just want to be part of that atmosphere and that vibrant sort of festive mood. So they probably come down and just spend the day in Lewiston or in Portland. So
Okay. And is that specifically for Eid or is that for like...
No, that's specifically for Eid. Okay. Yeah, that's specifically for Eid and where people come together. So.
Okay. And so like beyond these spaces, is there, does religion play a role in your life in other ways or...
Yeah, I mean, you are, if you're Muslim, like, you have to live your life as a Muslim. Islam is a way of life, as people simply put it, and that means, like, praying 5 times a day, wherever you are, and that means often than not, you have to make yourself at home wherever you are, because nobody is going to make that for you. Like, people will hold a meeting at 1 p.m. when they don't know that you have to pray at 1 p.m. So you have to be like, I'm going to step out at 1:15, so I got to pray, right? Or you could be at a function or whatever the case may be, and they schedule exactly when you're supposed to be praying, and you just have to, like, excuse yourself because, like, you might be the only Muslim person that's ever held that, like, that position or they have ever come across. And then, again, there are vastly, like, different Muslims who do different things, like... There could have been somebody Muslim holding that position prior to you, but they just never cared enough to really share that part of who they are, and they just kind of like prayed all their prayers at their house or something. So it depends on what kind of, how comfortable you are, really. Like, and I've always had the luxury of just not caring about what other people think, so I just pray when I need to pray, and like I ask for what I need, and like I don't necessarily feel that I have to forego or shorten any part of who I am for the comfort of white people or for the comfort of anybody who doesn't know me. So I don't, like, obviously I won't, I try not, I won't be obnoxious about it, but I'll be like, I really gotta step out and I need to pray, and like, you scheduled this, it's not my problem, like, you did this to yourself, like, you could have asked, you know. So and even with Ramadan, like, I think like weeks before, prior, I'll be like there are days I'm gonna have to check out of work because I have to prep meals for folks who are cooking, folks who are fasting. So, like, I think it's just like as much as Lewiston is diverse, like, the businesses don't adhere to us, like, they don't adhere to our faith, they don't adhere to all of that. Like, it's very rare, like, that you would walk into a business and they'd be. Conscious, they're more conscious of vegans than they are of, like, people who have been practicing this faith for longer than the world probably existed, right? And veganism, and nothing against vegans or whatever, but, like, it's interesting how quickly those sort of needs are adapted to quickly rather than an entire, like, what is it, 1.6 billion Muslims, like, there's like insane number of us. Yeah. There's a shortage of us anywhere. So it's just interesting to see that, like, sort of ideologies followed by a few people can be accommodated rather quickly compared to us who've been here for years. And it's very interesting to say the least.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It is. All right, so we've talked about community, family, like religion, so like traditions. What about language? Does language play a role?
Yeah, that language is those things that I always find it to be a double-edged sword, because I speak Somali, I speak Maymay, which is a dialect spoken in parts of Somalia. Not every Somali knows Maymay. I can write and read Arabic, and for what it's worth, I can write Latin too. And then obviously I speak English. So I think the obviously all of those play. When you're home, you don't speak English. Like, my mom doesn't speak English at all. So, you know, that presents sort of a different different requirement when I'm home. And so speaking, particularly for me, it's not even just Somali, and with my mom, I specifically only speak with Maymay, which is the language that she speaks in the parts of Somalia that she grew up in.
Right.
If I'm speaking Somali with her, she's like, she understands and she can communicate back, but her comfort and the fluidity of how she talks is much more in of Maymay, so we just speak of Maymay. Okay. So having to transition in your head all the time, I always have like 0.5 second of glitch in my brain. I'm like, just give me a second. I need to transition, right? And then it's always interesting when you have spent the weekend at home and then going back to school the next day. And like, I've forgotten all the English words I know. Give me a second, okay? I need a couple hours to like adjust myself to this world. So going back to school and like missing every other word because you just kind of like man, like your brain can only move, I guess, so quickly. But yeah, and I think this always presents a unique sort of like in your writing, in the way that you, the way that you present thoughts and like, and all of those things are like, you know, even as small of a thing as a joke, right? Like it's not, especially for us Somalis, we're very, very, very big on sarcasm and very big on like humor. So that being not translate, not being able to transition that like certain element of who you are really into the language of the majority in that space, in that space, in that moment in time, it's always disappointing because you're like, man, I can't even tell you a joke because you would not understand it. And by the time I'm done explaining it to you, ain't jib no more, you know? So yeah, I think it was presented that. And then, you know, like, and it's funny because like when I called my nieces back home, they're always like, you sound funny. And I'm like, thanks. Thanks. Because like I guess there's an accent to my Somali now because I speak English that like, they're like, oh, you sound funny, auntie. Like, I was like, oh, thanks. That's really lovely of you to remind me, right? Because you know, you're not landing the words right or whatever the case may be. Maybe your sentence construction it's a little wacky, right? So you're like, you sound like you're 5 years old. Like, what is happening? And I'm like, thanks. Do you understand what I'm trying to get to you though? You know, so you get those kind of comments or people are like, oh, make sure you don't forget your language. And I'm like, I'm only like speaking 40% of the time, but okay. Right. You know, so yeah, I think like, but the upscale of living in Lewiston is there are a large Somali community. You run into folks who don't speak English. So you have the opportunity to like just converse with them in that said, in either Somali or Mai-Mai.
Right.
And it helps to retain sort of that part of who are. There's some young Somalis who have completely like forgotten the entire language, and then some of them will go back home to just be like, I'm an adult, man. Like I'm about to start my own family. It's embarrassing that I don't know the language anymore. So they go back and they try to relearn it essentially as an adult, because they've lost so much of it, and a lot of that it's you know, it doesn't help when you're othersized in every aspect. So you're trying to erase your accent, you're trying to, you know what I mean, you can't forego your name, you can't forego sort of the features that make you appear Somali or whatever the case may be, but maybe if you don't have an accent, or maybe if you know, if you just simply forgotten the language, maybe you can fit in a little bit better with whoever you're trying to fit in with. So you know, so we can thank assimilation, I suppose, for sort of some folks losing that part of who they are. So,
what's something that you would say in my mind to your mom? Like, how would, I don't know, like greet her or like things to say, like if she would like come into the museum and like listen to your voice, like what's something that you would like say to her?
I think. Like in Somali or in Mai-Mai or
yeah,
in English,
Mama, yeah.
Like so for us Islamically, we always greet people. So we would say Assalamu Alaikum, which means peace be upon you, and then we would say just Ayoset, which means how are you, hoy, or how I'm saying it in Somali, how are you, mom. So that's something like that. So you would like, so you would just you always greet people by our salam, and then you always. Go ask folks how they're doing, usually. Right. So, or Sa'at, which is the short version of how are you.
Okay.
So, Sa'at, yeah. So,
oh.
Yeah.
Cool. And so, you're able to speak my mind with your mother. What about your, like, your brothers, their kids, their partners?
My older brother speaks Kiswahili, which is a language spoken in Kenya and other, and other African countries. I unfortunately never got a chance to learn it.
Right.
Hopefully when I go back one day. But those of us, it's interesting because the dynamic, my nieces right now are struggling with the basics of Somali because they're in school. Like majority of their days, right, with the exception of summer, and when they spend a lot more time with their grandparents or grandmother, but a lot of them just speak English. We try to get them to speak in strictly in Somali, at least if not Mai-Mai, at least Somali. But they for sure are struggling. They're going to be one of those kids who's probably going to have to go back to learn the language, which is always a little heartbreaking because, like, you know, you can see slipping it away. Like, mm-hmm. you just get to see, like, a little bit less of who we are in our children and probably their children. And unless, you know, I don't think it will ever completely be erased just because, mm-hmm. right, like, it's just, we're people of a whole nation. Like, it's right. not going to happen. But I think it's, you know, it's not to say that it's not possible either.
Right.
Right. So, my brothers and I just speak English or Somali. They're much better than me because they're older than me and they tend to interact with humans more than me in regards to, like, larger Somali people. So, there are times when, like, but I think that the interesting thing about language for us is that we slip out of different languages like there's no tomorrow. Like, in 2 seconds, like, sometimes I forget with, like, my non-Somali friends that mm-hmm. they don't speak Somali. Mm-hmm. So I would go from English to Somali to my Maya and back to English and then back to Somali. And then my friends would be looking at it, I have no idea what the hell you just said. And I was like, oh, sorry. I forgot. So the transition is just incredibly, like, really smooth. You can be yeah. sitting in the house with us and one moment I'm talking in Somali, the next my man, the next English, and then it just goes, like, you just yeah. slip in out of it depending on what you want to express and what you're talking about. So yeah. it's not really as hard. I don't know about other people, but, like, for me at least, like, it's easy to be in and out of the smooth of the conversation doesn't get lost right. because you're just kind of, like, carrying on and that person you're talking to understands what you're saying in all of them. So it's cool. It's kind of cool sometimes. It's like, oh, it's kind of like a little magic. You can just say whatever you want. So, yeah.
So we've talked about, right, community, family, language, work. Tell me a little about the role, like, do you participate in politics and what role politics plays in your life?
Oh, God. I knew that was coming. Yeah, so I'm currently running for House, I'm running to become a House representative, which basically means I'll probably in, like, 2 months, probably be sworn in as a legislator. In college, I studied politics, so I don't think it's too anybody's really surprised that I'm interested in these issues of tackling, like, housing crisis and things of that nature. So yeah, the politics certainly plays into it, and I think it's driven by my experience in Maine and my experiences mm-hmm. in the United States of really asking, like, you know, who, like, at the end of the day, asking, like, who is the decision maker, and when they're making that decision, are they actually sitting with other folks who helped inform, or them themselves are part of the decision making criteria, help inform the decision itself, right? Like, if you're not if one, the government isn't reflective of the people, how can we say that's the people's government? Mm-hmm. And two, if the folks how could we make an argument the decision is well informed if the people you're making decisions about aren't even remotely considered or mm-hmm. at that table? So yeah, I don't think there was a point in my life where I was like, I'm gonna become a politician, but but I think it certainly there were certainly things that led to this point where now I'm potentially gonna be a sitting legislator at some point. So
right,
yeah,
right. Right, and that's right. Like, you know, think about, like, you know, formal politics.
Yeah.
Were there sort of things that you were involved with leading up to it, or things about politics that interested you or that you participated in before? Yeah. Or things that people might not consider politics, but you thought about as sort of political?
Yeah, I think for me, like, advocacy has always been sort of at the center of who I am, like, advocating for my own needs in school and other areas, but also for family members. And, like, and I have a knack for languages, but I tend to be able to pick up languages rather quickly. So for me, learning English wasn't that of a challenge. Like, mm-hmm. I learned it rather really quickly. So that put me sort of a position where, like, I would read people's mail. Like, not, mm-hmm. I didn't break it to people's mail, but they brought it to me and I would read it for yeah. them. And so they would bring it and I would to let them know. So like reading, like I know it sounds very strange, but reading like documents and like government document, IRS documents, and these things quickly makes you realize like, oh, there is institutions. They are, there are institutions that are trying to hold us accountable for things. But how are we holding them accountable for anything, right? Because they seem to want to be readily ready to collect. They're very much interested in our information. They're very much interested in knowing what you're thinking. But it doesn't seem this doesn't seem very two-way street to me.
Right.
It just seems like they, like it's just at us rather than asking them. So again, in the back of my head is one of the government, if it doesn't reflect the people, like it's not reflective of the people who's trying to govern, I don't understand how that's the government itself. But to also like you can't be asking people to do things, and not expecting to hold you accountable for the direction that you're giving. So a lot of those things, like early on, I just kind of like had a lot of questions of being like, why is that? Like, who is doing that? Why is that? So a lot of just questions of asking and being like, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously, like growing up in the like the 2016 election happened, which forces you to question a whole lot of things. That's it's Trump who got elected 2016, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So all of that, and then you have, you know, like the fact that like we're an immigrant doesn't exempt us from experiencing blackness in this country, being Muslim in this country, being a woman in this country, Roe versus Wade, just. Right, and even though I am Muslim and I'm, you know, I'm a Muslim, but like black women are four times likely to die from birth complications. So even like the fact that I'm Muslim does not stop me from having thoughts and questions about abortion rights. What does that look like for folks? All of these kind of lead to, and then going into school that's all white and knowing that like, we're just an afterthought a lot of the time, forces you to ask a lot of questions and being like, hold on a second. And then I think what really sealed it for me was I had a class that discussed the constitutional rights, and looking at that document and recognizing like majority of us are those who, I wasn't even a person, but I'm being asked to pay tax. So for folks who are like, let's keep the constitution the way it is, I'm like, okay, that's cool, let's keep it that way, but don't ask me for tax.
Right.
We're gonna stop a lot of things.
Right.
Like you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. Like you either want your constitution the way it was, which was written for you, or you want an updated version where it includes me.
Right.
And you can get, you know what I mean? So I think just being forced to be in those spaces where you get to ask you like questions and be like, oh wow. And you struggle with sort of who you are too, because it's like, oh shit, man. I'm in a world that doesn't even consider me. And somehow I have to keep screaming to get them to consider me. So that really just sort of enforced. If I can do even a little bit damage to the notion that we aren't worthy of whatever, all the good in the world, then, you know, I don't know. Maybe it won't happen, but hopefully, you know, so.
Oh, that's real.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. It's actually a really good note to end on, but I always like to wrap up by asking people, you know, is there anything that I haven't asked that, you know, that you wanna share?
I think it's just important to note to whoever is gonna listen to this that change is inevitable wherever we go in life. And the question we should always be asking ourselves and our community and our country and our states is that how can we prepare so the damage is not everlasting on all of us, right? There's nothing on this earth that's gonna stop a change from happening. The only service, the only ethical responsibility on all of us is to ask how can we ensure that that change doesn't cost lives, doesn't cause harm that is irreversible for our environment, for our kids, and the well-being of all of us as humanity. So yeah, that's all.
Dope. Thank you so much.
Come
up here.